Do you want to tell people about your podcast, your Twitter, etc.?
Sure. I've got a couple of different podcasts. There's Pappy's Flatshare Slamdown, which is like a live panel show type podcast set in a flat, which I do with Tom and Ben, the two other guys from Pappy's, the sketch show I'm in. I also have Pappy's Bangers and Mash, which is a bit more like a kind of conventional podcast, like three guys in a room sitting and chatting. But we also we listen back to the chat and then write sketches based on the chat we've had, and so that's sort of why it's called Bangers and Mash. The idea is that the chat is the mash and the sketches are the bangers. So they're both available from iTunes, Bangers and Mash and Flatshare Slamdown. And you can find me on Twitter at Matthew Crosby.
Good work. So if you did have a tea party or just a general dinner, who from history would you be the first person, can be from now or could be from history, who would be the first person you would have around?
Well, I was thinking it would be quite good because everybody says Stephen Fry. I don't know if any of your guests have said Stephen Fry so far.
They said Stephen Fry and they said that's too obvious.
Yeah, here's why I've gone for Hugh Laurie as my first guest. Because if you are the double act partner of the person who constantly tops polls of who people would like to invite to a dinner party, you must feel pretty put out. I know at one stage Hugh Laurie was the most sort of famous person on television. His house was the biggest show on telly. But at the same time, it still must have stuck in his craw that Stephen Fry was getting all the invitations to dinner parties and he was getting none. So I thought to redress the balance, I'm going to go for Hugh Laurie.
And he can play his music as well.
Well, exactly. I mean, I could set up a little keyboard in the corner of the room. I don't have a piano in my house, but I could set up a little keyboard in the corner of the room, you know, and make it look very casual. But basically, yeah, it's a two for one because you don't just get a dinner guest. You also get some free entertainment.
Because Stephen Fry is the number one that everyone would have because it seems like no one dislikes him. Everyone seems to love him and want to quiz him about how the world works and stuff, because he seems to be just know everything, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. Although, I mean, it's not that he doesn't know everything, but what people forget is that on QI, he's got a big stack of cards and he's seen the questions beforehand. You know, like, obviously, he can't predict what the other guests are going to say, but the one person on the quiz show who, I mean, I know there's a lot of controversy as to whether or not people see the questions before they go on panel shows, but the one person who's definitely seen the questions is the person asking those questions. It's a bit like when Paxman is on University Challenge and he's going, come on, you go, you've got the answer in front of you. It seems kind of unfair that you're shouting at these, let's face it, children on University Challenge when you've got all the answer. Well, firstly, you're a grown man. Secondly, you've got a card with the answer written on it. I'd be able to shout, come on, it's easy, if I had it written down in front of me. So I've got nothing against Stephen Fry. I think he's a fantastic bloke. I think Hugh Laurie is going to be. I'm going to pick him just to redress the balance, to begin steps towards redressing the balance.
I think it's needed. There was a big rumour that Hugh Laurie is going to be Doctor Who, actually.
Was there?
Which would be quite interesting, I think.
That would be incredible, yeah.
Yeah, I think it would be too obvious. I think he'd probably be too obviously quirky and British.
unless he played it as like the first American Doctor Who,
that would be interesting. Mm. Yeah, people would be really. I think Twitter would literally collapse.
Twitter would explode. You'd only be able to see that little fail whale. That was all. It would just be constantly. It would be in constant implosion. Yeah.
So who's your number two then?
My number two is now. I think in terms of if you wanted to get a national treasure. And not all my answers are anti-Stephen Fry, but if you want to get a genuine national treasure, I think you could do far worse than Danny Baker. He's another bloke who is, you know, phenomenally well-informed. He knows his stuff. He knows all about pop culture. But he's just got a fantastic way with words. I've just finished his first book, at Sea in a Sieve, I think it's called, or To Sea in a Sieve. And he's lived an incredible life. You know, he was around at the kind of the birth of the punk scene. He wrote for The Enemy. back when that was quite an exciting publication. You know, he worked on stuff like TFI Friday. He's been around at some pretty exciting times in kind of recent pop culture history in Britain. Yeah, he just seems like the sort of bloke I could I'd probably have a nice chat with.
Yeah, he obviously knows his sport, and but also he did some BBC Four thing, didn't he, about albums, I think.
He did a couple of shows for BBC Four. Yeah, he did one where people talked through their sort of record collections and discussed their favourite albums. But a better one that he did, the one I preferred, was actually the show he did about, a variety of different sort of COD documentaries about quite mundane things. Like he did a documentary about bridges. And it was all made up of like old archive footage. It was like the closest thing that BBC Four gets to TV Burt, Harry Hill's TV Burt, in that it was loads of reappropriated bits of footage from old BBC documentaries, with Danny Baker kind of making a sort of sardonic comment over the top. And it was brilliant. It was really, really funny. But he's great, and also he has a phenomenal outlook on life. If you ever listen to his Desert Island Discs. I really, really recommend it because he seems to have a tremendous optimism and positivity. And I think that's quite rare in the world that people are sort of boundlessly optimistic. Like he has no real, like he says, if he ever gets money, he feels a compulsion to spend it almost immediately. And I can relate to that. Like I very rarely have any money, but when I get it, I love going on like a nice holiday or, you know, taking the wife out for a nice meal. I think if you've got money, you should spend it. Reading his book, really, sort of, I really realised that we've got a lot in common.
Wow. No, I think you'd be good. He's very enthusiastic. That's a good
exactly.
thing.
Exactly, he's an enthusiastic man.
So who would your third person be then?
Should we do one of the ladies now? Rather than
if you want to do the ladies.
Obviously, what I don't want is a table where it's boys on one side, girls on the other. I don't want it to be like a, you know, like a... like a year six disco. I want it to be, I'm going to mix it up. So I'm going to go for Ella Henderson. Do you know Ella Henderson? Are you familiar with her work?
No.
Right, she's a singer. She's a singer from the last series of The X Factor. Now, you know when you start watching a thing, like, ironically, and there becomes a point where you go, oh, I've stopped watching this ironically. I actually really like it. Well, Ella Henderson was that for me, an X Factor, in that she's a singer. I think when she started on the X Factor, she was 16. So like, she had that story of like, oh, she's just a kid. Is she going to be good? And she turned out to be fantastic. And she wrote her own songs. It got to the point where I used to sort of watch X Factor and make sarcastic comments on Twitter. And obviously, I still do that. But I don't know what it is. Something about Ella Henderson, you think, oh, if you weren't on X Factor, I'd still think you were brilliant. And so this probably paints me in a terrible light, but for my 33rd birthday, my last birthday, I was working up in Glasgow, and I have my birthday on the 12th of February, so it's quite near to Valentine's Day. So it was a sort of joint Valentine's Day 33rd birthday present. My wife got me tickets to see X Factor live in Glasgow, and honestly, I was like a little kid at a One Direction concert. I went berserk. I was screaming. I bought the T-shirt. I've got the T-shirt. When Ella came out, I was in tears. Honestly, I don't know what happened. But so I would love to have Ella Henderson around just to find out. You know, in fact, if anything, a duet between Ella Henderson with Hugh Laurie on the piano would be a thing of such great beauty. I don't think there would be a dry eye in the house. So Ella's my third guest.
Yeah, it's a weird one. I've been watching it recently. The start of X Factor when they do have the freaks on, basically. You know,
yes.
they have the sob story one, and then they have the weirdo who's got his laptop and he's freaking everyone out with a cat. I love stuff like.
The thing I like about the sob story is that the sob stories now, they used to be, you know, genuine sob stories, but now they're just like, I've got a kid. Like, that's their sob story. Oh, I've got a son and I'll miss him if I go to boot camp. Not really a sob story, is it? Everybody has to go to work. Like, everyone who has kids goes to work and misses their kids. That's not a televisual sob story. But I think it's funny because the new series of X Factor, I don't know if you've seen this most recent series, but they've now divided it into sort of two sections. You've got to get past the judges in like a little room and then you go live. But I don't know if that format necessarily works.
No, because, I don't think it does. No.
Because obviously the freaks only get to see the judges and the judges always say no.
Yeah.
What you really want, I mean, if you want to bring it back to like the proper circus sideshow freak show, you need there to be a big crowd of 3,000 people braying at these freaks. That's the way the freaks should work. Not just four people going, oh, I thought you were lovely, but I'm afraid it's a no. It's got to be a big crowd of people you sort of baying for blood, basically. That's when the format really works. So it's a shame. It's a shame you're not going to see any freaks in the live show. They probably did it because it seemed unfair.
I like when the freaks go in front of the live audience and they actually, people ironically go, yeah, keep them in, come on.
That's the best, isn't it? That is the absolute best, when people know that they're rubbish and so give them a standing ovation. Hmm. People can be very cruel and it is fun to watch them on the telly.
So, number four.
Right, number four is, I'm going to go back to the gentleman. I'm going to go for Lorne Michaels, who is the creator of the TV show Saturday Night Live. Uh-huh. Now, I've got an obsession with Saturday Night Live that extends to basically buying any book I can about Saturday Night Live. Like, I've read the Tom Shales book, the Live from New York. I've read, like, Chris Farley's autobiography. I recently read a book called Top of the Rock, which was all about NBC and how NBC works. I read Gasping for Airtime by Jay Moore. So I've read a bunch of books that are about, in some way or another, Saturday Night Live. And I've probably watched Saturday Night Live twice, because it's not on British TV. You have to sort of download it on the internet. I'm not very tech savvy. So I've only, for a show I've read five or six books about, it's crazy that I haven't watched more episodes of Saturday Night Live. But I think whenever I watch it, I always think, oh, it's interesting. It's quite a good show. But I think the process behind it is more fascinating. Mm. The idea of, you know, starting to write a show on a Monday and filming it on a Saturday when you've got literally nothing. And by the Saturday, you've got an hour and a half's worth of comedy. I think that's a really exciting process. And it's a process that we've sort of used whenever we've had, you know, previews or shows come up, especially when we first started as Pappies. We'd get together on the we all lived in different parts of Britain, so we all write stuff and email it to each other, and we'd read it through on the Tuesday, again just in our own flats, and then we'd all meet on the Friday, rehearse all night Friday and do a show on the Saturday. And I quite like the kind of, I think you create different stuff if you're working to a very tight deadline, the kind of stuff you create. And also you tend to write a lot on stage, you improvise a lot, you mess around, you try and make the sketches work more when they're in front of an audience. So I sort of like the idea of kind of working at fever pitch. I also like the idea that, you know, once you've made it, that's it, it's done. You'll never see it again. I sort of like the notion of a TV show that isn't really meant to ever be watched, you know, aside from that live Saturday night. So I'd love to chat to Lorne Michaels. And again, he's someone who's lived through a phenomenal, you know, a phenomenal period in recent cultural history. Like, he started the show in the late 70s. And, you know, so he knew all the Python guys. He knows the Rolling Stones. Obviously, he's worked with all the great American comics of the last sort of 30, 40 years. Bill Murray, John Belushi, Will Ferrell, Chevy Chase, like loads of, you know, Bill Hader, Jason Sudeikis, you know, all of these brilliant new comics, Tina Fey, Amy Poehler. So yeah, I'd love to have him along.
Yeah, and I know what you mean by that process. It is an interesting thing, because I think you're going to take more risks, and you're probably going to have let in a few more that you probably wouldn't if you were constantly editing it all down. But I think if it's out there, it's not going to. You wouldn't expect people to be going over it in 30 years' time, you know, every single episode just going, oh, did you see that? That was a bit of a weak bit.
Yeah, exactly, you know, exactly. Yeah. Well, that's it. They'll remember the good stuff and they'll forget the weak stuff. And that's the brilliant thing about it. And also, the audience watch it in a different way. They watch it knowing it's a live show. They watch it knowing it's been prepared that week. So I think it's the same when you see someone, you know, when you see a stand-up on stage and something happens that is clearly not part of the act and they work it into the act and they improvise with it. The audience loves that so much more because they know they're getting something. Excuse me. They're getting something that no one else would have got. If you came and saw the show the next night, you wouldn't get it. If you saw it the night before, you wouldn't get it. So it's that kind of interesting thing of an audience watches Saturday Night Live knowing that it's been created kind of almost in the moment, which I think is quite an exciting way to work.
So who's going to go in to chat to Mr. Saturday Night Live then?
Well, I, to keep him company, I'm going to have one of my favourite ex-Saturday Night Live cast members, which is Amy Poehler, who most people will probably know as Leslie Knope from the TV show Parks and Recreation, which is one of my favourite TV shows. There's a lot, like, the Americans seem to have taken that format that The Office did so brilliantly and run with it. That kind of documentary style, it's very sort of very verite, shaky camera sort of filming style with every character doing straight to camera kind of interview sequences. They've done it so brilliantly. Obviously, I love the British Office, but I think I love the American Office even more. And certainly I love Parks and Rec, which was made by some of the same team who made the American Office. It's brilliant. It's one of those shows that manages to both be, I think Modern Family as well is another great example.
Yeah.
It manages to both be incredibly funny, but also quite moving. You genuinely care about the characters in a way that I don't think many British shows, have achieved, where you genuinely love the characters and you want good things for them. They're not just sort of silly idiots.
They're quite poignant, I think, and they took at the heartstrings more than British stuff.
Yeah, they do, but in a way that doesn't seem sort of too saccharine. I know, obviously, Seinfeld never wanted to, they had their sort of famous mantra, no hugs, no learning. And I think a lot of American TV shows do kind of adopt that, sort of the kind of bigger ones, like, Two and a Half Men is quite a hard-edged show. But whereas, I quite like Two and a Half Men, but I really like Parks and Recreation. I think it's a genuinely brilliant show with some, like, three or four absolutely incredible characters. Leslie Knope's one of them. Ron Swanson. It's just like the idea of a sort of lazy laissez-faire boss who likes eating meat and is a bit of a sort of alpha male is quite a done trope. But they managed to do it so brilliantly. I think it's an excellent show.
She was on a Jeff Garland podcast. I don't know if you heard it.
She was actually, yeah. I love that. I love that podcast. I've just finished listening to the Colin Hay one. Jeff Garland. If we were going to do Six and Six, Jeff Garland was on the long list to be a bloke on there. So who have we got? We've got one more person left. One more girl left. Now, this is going to seem strange because I actually know this person, but I'm going to go for Emma Kenny as my final dinner party guest. Emma Kenny is the girl who plays my sister on our sitcom Bad Adults, which was on BBC Three. Is currently on iPlayer. And out on DVD, and series two is coming next year. But she is someone who we didn't know her before. The three of us have worked together for 10 years now, so we've been working together for a decade. So obviously, we know each other pretty well. So for her to come in and sort of join the team, which she did, she had to do pretty quickly. For her to come in and join the team is a massive undertaking, but we couldn't have asked for anyone better. She's absolutely fantastic. We found her just purely through the casting process. It was an open audition. We had a bunch of different people come in and cast, and just immediately she worked. She was brilliant. So I'm gonna also she's a writer. So she she was really good at forcing us to sort of write better jokes, which is like, it was like she had no qualms about saying, oh, this isn't funny enough, or I want my character to do something a bit more interesting here. Or so, yeah, so she was brilliant. And like immediately, because she had to come up and live in Glasgow, which is where we were filming the show. We had to live there for a couple of months. Immediately she, you know, we were hanging out with her, going out for nights out with her, and she was absolutely brilliant. So although she's not, I wouldn't say she's a celebrity, she's been on a few TV shows, she is almost certainly going to be. And so I'll invite her to the dinner party now, because there's a good chance in 6 months' time she won't be returning my calls.
So final question, what's going to be in your goodie bag at the end of the party?
Oh, like a little party bag?
Yeah.
Well, obviously you've got to have a bit of cake.
Yeah.
You've got to have a sort of like always a sort of cake that looks really good when it's a cake. Like it should be like, you know, when you're a kid, you want the cake to be like in the shape of Knight Rider or something like that. But then when it gets wrapped up in a small bit of kitchen towel, it just looks like the most disgustingly inedible thing, because the black icing will always bleed through the kitchen towel. And it'll look like the sort of, you know, the car park of a ferry. So obviously a bit of that. What do you call those things that you go oh, and a little thing unfurls?
Oh yeah,
party blower.
Yeah, party blower, I will call it a party. That sounds like some sort of erotic prostitute.
Party blower. Yeah, she's going to come round under the table after the party. The party blower. I like the way you specified an erotic prostitute.
Of course.
as opposed to
any other ones, yeah.
And the special, like, obviously that's a fairly standard for a goodie bag. The special item is a spare phone charger, because I don't know if this is the case, but I'm constantly losing phone chargers. So I'll find out what everyone has, whether they've got an HTC or an Android or whatever iPhone, and I'll get them all a small, like, little phone charger specifically for their phone that can be their travel charger. I mean, it might not seem like the most exciting gift, but they're going to be, you know, they're going to be staying in a Premier Inn, and they're going to go into their bag and go, oh, I forgot my phone charger. Hang on a sec. I've just come from Crosby's party. I can use that charger. There'll be, you know, obviously, celebrities have a jet set lifestyle. I bet you they always need phone chargers.
You think
happy to do it.
It's nice. It's kind of like a dad sort of gift, but it's good.
It is. It's practical. It's absolutely. It's a practical gift. But also, you've got the fun of the Knight Rider cake and the party blower. So, you know, there's. I put the fun into functional.
Tea time with Ian Todd